Welcome to episode 14 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Friday, September the 5th. I'm Tony. With me this week are Alan. Did you enjoy your holiday, Alan?
It was lovely, apart from being buried in the sand.
Wearing your Ubuntu t-shirt.
Of course.
We're also joined by Laura. Laura, what are you doing here?
I live here, and I'm filling in for Davey again.
Oh, he's on holiday, is he?
I think so.
Got that knotted handkerchief back out. And Simon, how was your trip down here?
Very fun. I had to pick Popey up from the train.
It's a little bit wet out, isn't it?
It is very wet. Glad not on the bike this time.
Yeah, I was saying, glad you didn't come on the bike, that's for sure. Excellent. So, what have we got in this episode?
We have the news.
Which is quite long. We have a discussion on the Free Culture Showcase, which Tony is involved in. We're going to talk about the Stephen Fry video that he made for GNU.
We discuss the risks and rewards of running IBEX in alpha form.
We're going to talk about the competition.
And we've got your feedback. Britain's favourite clever guy, Stephen Fry, was asked to make a Happy Birthday GNU video for the Free Software Foundation. In a somewhat awkward solo, Fry talks briefly about the benefits of free software and suggests GNUSense as an option for anyone looking to install free software. What do we think?
It was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
Oh, it was very good, actually. It was an excellent video.
I thought it was very nice. You sort of sit there going, that's Stephen Fry.
He's talking about geeky stuff that we do.
But do you like it because it's got Stephen Fry in it, or do you like it because it's got free software, or talking about free software?
Well, it's the celeb factor, yeah. I mean, the fact that it's a, you know, celebrity of whatever, you know, level, you know, whether you class him, you know, A-list celebrity or whatever, but, you know, it's someone who is well-known by the public talking about, you know, something that we try and talk to the public about all the time and probably doing it a lot better than we do.
Do you think it was realistic? Do you think it was grounded in what our perceptions of the free software world are? I mean, talking about GNUSense as the best option for people to try free software.
No, it's not. But I can understand why it was done the way it was done, because it's meant to be about free software. I
mean, why do you think it's not?
Well, because, as we've spoken about before, GNUSense, if you try and put GNUSense on your laptop, you're going to have issues.
What kind of issues?
Like, it won't have any non-free software on the distribution.
Is that not a good thing, that they would argue that, you know, you don't want non-free software, do you? You don't want binary blobs, you don't want flash players and other rubbish...
Wireless drivers.
...that you can't fix.
I want people to be able to use free software. I don't want them to miss the opportunity to use something other than the other operating systems because there is something that's not free on their system.
Yeah. If the option is them using Windows and all of the stuff that it tends to come with, versus them using, say, Ubuntu with a couple of binary blobs in it, you go for the Ubuntu option.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. And then if they want to get into freedom, you know, and be straight down the line, then absolutely. Once you've got your head around the new OS, then by all means, go and be hardcore freedom.
They would probably argue that you would want to get, if you want someone to have free software, they're better off having the whole environment free. Yeah, the all of the software on their machine free, so that in the event that there's any problem, they can contact the maintainer of that free software and potentially get it fixed, which is impossible if it's non-free software.
So it's all or more likely nothing.
Yeah, well, yeah, basically.
What about the sort of feel of the message? I mean, I guess or I believe that the Free Software Foundation sort of essentially wrote the script and they got Stephen Fry along to sit in a chair and read it and blow out the candles on a cake.
It did feel like that.
It did feel like that, because yeah, they kept talking about GNU Linux. Now, Stephen's written about Linux and things on his blog and hasn't called it GNU Linux before.
Yeah, but if he's a mouthpiece for GNU, on his own blog, he can say what he likes. But when he's a mouthpiece of the Free Software Foundation and GNU, he obviously has to say GNU/Linux every time.
And it just feels a bit contrived to me as a result.
Yeah, but you and I, and I would suspect some of our listeners, tend to refer to Linux as Linux and tend to refer to Ubuntu as Ubuntu or Ubuntu Linux and don't refer to it as GNU/Linux or Ubuntu GNU/Linux or anything, you know, as clunky as that. Mm. And so it does sound alien to us.
But if you're trying to convince non-Linux people of what you're saying, then you need to be pragmatic and not be awkward and GNU/Linux all the time.
I guess they would argue that it's not awkward. It's giving people credit for what they've written. And, you know, the fact that this has been going, how many years? 25 years now they're talking?
Yeah.
So it's been going a very long time and it's still going. And now they've got a distribution in GNUSense that you can put on some computers that works perfectly fine for some people in some circumstances. So it kind of has worked for them, you know, in some ways better than us.
But we sort of know their arguments. We've heard them say, oh yes, well it's a joint effort. And then we've heard Sun say, well, we have more lines of code in an average Linux distribution than GNU do, so it should be Sun/GNU/Linux. And we've heard all the counter arguments, and we've been bored to tears by them at times. But and I can see why, because it was a Free Software or GNU anniversary, it would be right to talk about GNU and to talk about, you know, its impact on in the Linux world or the free software world or whatever. But it was not a video that I would really want to show a non-Linux user.
Yeah, I agree. Really? I try and convince my parent, my mother-in-law and my father-in-law about Linux and Ubuntu and other free software stuff. And yeah, we talk about it on a, you know, semi-regular basis, given that I do this podcast, and so the conversation comes up.
Yeah.
And they know who Stephen Fry is. You know, they've seen him on TV. They know the history. And I agree with you. I wouldn't actually even show them this video. I might mention that Stephen Fry did a video something to do with free software, but I would actually feel embarrassed about showing them that video.
Yeah, I agree. It just
it makes my skin crawl.
So you're actually saying that it was a bad thing?
I think it's preaching to the converted. Yeah. I think the only people who are going to get anything out of that is people like us, free software weenies, are going to go, ooh, look, Stephen Fry on the telly. And, you know, and your average Joe is going to go, what? What's he talking about? Plumbing? Free software? It's like plumbing. What?
This is it. My trouble with this video is that I really like Stephen Fry. I've read his books. I've watched him on TV for years. And I think he's really great and literate and clever and erudite. And he's reading not a terribly good script, I don't think. It's a bit clunky in places. And it just feels a little bit dirty. It feels like he's a little bit sold out, almost.
He's lowered himself.
Yeah.
Sold out to free software.
If it had just been him in his flat and a video camera going, hi, it's Stephen Fry, and I just wanted to wish GNU and Free Software Foundation a happy 25th birthday for, you know, reaching 25 years of contribution to free software. Bam. Lovely.
Yeah, but if he'd done it himself in his own flat, he'd have done it with a Mac.
He did do it with a Mac.
Well, no, I
there
mean,
was a
using
Mac, an OS deck. Next to him.
I asked Mac Lee, and he said that Mac was running GNU Sense.
It didn't show that. It was there publicising Mac Air.
Well, he said it was running GNU Sense, and, you know, I have no reason to doubt that.
It just came across as, like, a really, a little bit tacky corporate video, and it made me feel worse for Stephen and no better of the Free Software Foundation.
Okay, so how could it have been improved?
Bit more relaxed.
Bear in mind,
juggling,
it's going to have to
plate,
be...
plate spinning. something entertaining to get the idiots who watch ITV, you know, watching...
They've got to do something to celebrate. And how could they have improved it? How could we... I mean, let's not go down the format route and all the releases and the licensing and stuff. How could they have done it better?
I think a script writer should have written the copy. If they didn't, if they did, then they should fire the script writer.
Should they have just let Stephen in there with a decent camera and the setup and said, you know this stuff, crack on?
No, because if he'd have done it, this is the point I was going to say about him being in his flat. If you'd have let him do it on its own, he probably would have done it with a Mac and used iLife or some other proprietary app, and the free software weenies would have blown their whistle and said, this is not allowed, you know, this is in H.264 and it should be Ogg Theora, blah, blah, blah.
But if it's just a video that he's made and is releasing, it's up to him what he uses. The only difficulty is if it becomes like a Free Software Foundation endorsed video, that it needs to be done on all the free software stuff. And somebody who has generated video on free software, I can appreciate the difficulties that involves.
Absolutely.
And then releasing it under a potentially non-free license.
Ha, 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 ha. That was quite funny. Although, you know, the Free Software Foundation don't release anything non-software under a fully free license. Everything's Creative Commons, no derivatives, or similar licenses. So they're only following their own track record. However somewhat hypocritical some might think that is.
I don't know, it just seems like a really missed opportunity, because you obviously got somebody who has got a public profile as a very clever person, Stephen Fry, who could have been saying great things that you in a video that you could show your relatives or your gran or whatever.
So who would have been better?
I think Stephen Fry is the right person. I just don't think it was just the right content.
Right, okay, so yeah, better script.
Yeah, I mean, he did look a bit awkward sort of sat in that chair as well. You know, maybe sort of, you know, look at, I don't know, jazzing up, let's say plate spinning or something like that.
Fire. That would have been good.
Yeah.
Well, he writes blog posts fairly, a lot more, in a lot more relaxed way. And, I mean, he could have done a video on that level of...
Yeah, we don't know the circumstances. I mean, it could well be that he was under a time pressure or something. Who knows?
We can only judge on what was published output.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's our right, I guess.
This is but our humble opinion.
This is our humble opinion, yes. And if Stephen wanted to send me any books or anything, that would be great.
Yeah, his blog is stephenfry.com/blog, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Our very own Tony has been recruited by Jono to help judge the Ubuntu Free Culture Showcase, in which people are invited to submit audio and video files to replace the example content, which was previously delivered in a standard Ubuntu system. Has anyone taken a listen and a look at what's been submitted so far?
No.
Good.
No.
Well, I have. And, Tony, what do you think?
I haven't listened. I quite deliberately haven't listened to anything until the judging time comes, so that I see it all or hear it all fresh. Because there's audio and video submissions.
And what's the plan? Are you just going to listen to them and then say, yeah, that's good, and chuck it on the CD? Or how's that going
to
work?
I think you're attributing more planning to this process than I'm aware of. well, I'm not the only judge, thank God.
Who else is judging?
I think Corey and Louis from Ubuntu Studio, yeah, they're both judging. And I think there's a couple of other people as well. So that's good, because I'm really not sure why I was asked, but it's great, so that's fine. So we're going to sit and listen to the entries in our appropriate domiciles and vote or something, I guess, to see which ones we want to make onto the CD.
And if any of them are good enough and come up to muster, then they all get added into what people normally see in the examples directory or something.
I think that's the plan, yeah, at the moment.
So is this to replace the videos of Nelson Mandela?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
It's, everyone kind of dances around the subject of the Mandela video, because I think there was a lot of effort made by Mark actually to get the video on there, to get the video of Mandela,
right.
And nobody really wants to ask Mark to get rid of it.
Was it filmed especially for Ubuntu?
I don't know.
It never mentions the Linux bit of Ubuntu. He's talking about Ubuntu, the word, and Ubuntu, the sort of the spirit. Is it a good idea?
Is it a good idea to get people to put content on the CD or to offer out?
Well, we talked to Pete Savage back in sort of one of the very early shows, didn't we?
Yeah.
And he was talking about how it was good to have ways that people who aren't programmers can get involved in the distribution, producing a good distribution. And it seems like a really good idea. If people out there who are using Ubuntu and are creative but not programmers, yeah, get some content on the CD that shows off what you can do on Ubuntu to the best of its ability and in the best light. Whether this showcase proceeds to do that or not, we'll tell.
Well, it's difficult because I think there's only been about a month or so that this competition's open. And I had a chat with Jono and Corey about it, and I think they'll do it again if it's successful this time. Then they'll do it again for the next release and maybe have longer so people have more chance to create their own stuff, because I wouldn't be surprised if half of the stuff that's on the page, and we'll put a link to it in the notes that go with the podcast, I wouldn't be surprised if half of that stuff was created before the competition started. You know, it wasn't specifically created for this. It may well be. I mean, I don't know, because I've not contacted each of the people individually. But
I don't think there was a requirement for it to have been.
No, but, I mean, I don't know. I think it should be. I think it should be created uniquely for this. Otherwise, you know, anyone creating content could just go out and get their entire library and submit the whole lot. And there's no requirement for them to have actually made a bit of effort to... I mean, they made effort in the first place to create it, but no effort to make it, you know, unique for Ubuntu. Or am I expecting too much?
I don't know. If you've written the best song in the world and mixed it using Arda and free software 3 weeks before the competition opened, would it not be reasonable to submit that if it was the best song in the world? And then, you know, just after the competition opens, you have to go and sit down and you write something rubbish instead.
No, I'm not saying that's the only requirement, that the date that you created it was the only requirement. But, you know, having a target of the Ubuntu CD, not just, you know, people create their own music at any time and their own videos at any time. And then you hear about this competition. Ah, I made something 3 years ago. I'll just stick it in that competition. I mean,
it's a means of getting it out there.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that right? Or I mean,
I think it might be a bit restrictive, actually. Knowing a few arty types, putting them on the spot and say produce can be quite difficult. I think you should just open it up. You know, if you've got something, whether it's, you know, 4 weeks old or 40 years old, please submit, because we want content.
You put 7/5 on there.
No, well, actually, this was discussed at UDS a year ago, and I was in the room when we talked about this, and we specifically made sure that Jono was excluded from entering the competition so that we could have none of his metal, Jono's World of Metal, on the CD.
Oh, that sounds fair. I wouldn't have voted for it anyway.
No, absolutely.
Just looking down the list, it seems to be the same people submitting several things, so there aren't that many unique people entering.
Yeah, I guess it's difficult. I mean, maybe it's publicity of this competition. Maybe there wasn't enough.
Yeah, sure, enough time, like we did.
Yeah, and it wasn't... I mean, there were various options chosen. This was the one that was chosen, was have a competition based on, you know, here, rather than have a separate website, or rather than go and ask a content provider like Jamenda or Magnitude, rather than ask them, you know, and only get content from those providers, open it up to absolutely everyone. But opening it up to absolutely everyone with 1 month's notice has resulted in, what, a dozen people submitting. Would we get more if we went directly to someone like Jamenda and said, publicize this on your site, and have a button on their site that says, submit your content to the Ubuntu CD? But then we're restricting it to only people who submit to Jamenda. So, you know, there's swings and roundabouts whether this is the right way of doing it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have liked to have seen a variety of people submitting stuff, or a wider variety of people submitting stuff than have done, rather than lots of people submitting, I did this track, you know, submitting 8 or 9 tracks. Because, firstly, if it's all your stuff, it's going to sound probably quite similar anyway. And secondly, if the small number of people who've submitted aren't all that good at what they do, I'm not saying in this case, because I haven't listened to them, so I don't know. But if they are not...
Keep digging.
No, but if they turn out to be not all that good, then we're in a little bit of a situation going, well, do we stick stuff on the CD so we can say we've run the competition and that we have had user submitted content, and isn't it great, at the risk of it not actually being all that good on the CD for people who are listening to it for the first time?
So what's worst case scenario? You either put rubbish content on the CD, or you put and say, well, that's what came out of the competition, or you put none of the content on the CD and say, well, actually, it wasn't up to scratch.
Worst case scenario is, hello, I'm going to talk about Ubuntu.
Leaving Mandela on the video, is that what you're saying? on the CD?
Yeah, maybe.
And it doesn't have to be rubbish. It could just be that it's not suitable for this particular distribution.
Yeah. I mean, if we had some really heavy, hardcore trance music in there, it's probably not going to...
be perfect, wouldn't it? Yeah.
It would be perfect for one person, and then for the next person, it would be like, what the hell's this?
This is one of the big problems with the whole creativity thing, with, you know, not just for the free culture showcase.
Damn creative types.
Well, no, not the creative types. It's everyone has an opinion. Like, you know, people keep bitching about, you know, this is a completely different subject, but related, the fact that Ubuntu is brown. I don't really care. I leave it as brown on my desktop. But a lot of people really don't like it. And the same way that if you put a piece of music in there, there's going to be an awful lot of the population who just don't like it. And you can't keep everyone happy.
But there's nothing forcing them to listen to it. To be fair, I have never listened to them myself.
And there's nothing stopping people changing their desktop from brown to some other colour. But people still bitch about it.
Yeah, but I mean, at least the brown thing you see when you turn your computer on. Whereas I think I've once been into the examples folder. And it's hidden away and don't need it.
I don't need free culture, says Laura.
Now, I think it's a good idea to have them on the CD, partly because when you've installed, you can test out that everything's working.
I think that's part of the reason for it being there, and that's why there's lots of different types of files in there, is to test them all out.
But we've we've mentioned the fact that we're quite limiting, in that we've limited it to a month. Why not just have a small repository where all of it can go?
Ongoing.
And I mean, yeah, absolutely, continuously rolling. I mean, who are the judges to judge whether it is suitable?
There already is that kind of thing. There is already a repository. I mean, you've got things like for graphics, you've got GNOME Look, GNOME Art, and Kubuntu Look, and things like that. And for audio, you've got Jamendo, and you know, all the other audio things like Magnitude and so on. So there already is repositories for this stuff. This is more tying it onto the CD.
But I see what Simon says. I think it's actually got some merit as well, because you could have a 6-month rolling thing. You know, every 6 months you just say, well, what's come in the last 6 months? Is any of it good enough to put on the CD?
Like the Ubuntu calendar, a piece of content every month.
I'm not familiar with the Ubuntu calendar.
I'll tell you about it later.
Okay. Is it one of these things where it's had one piece of content in the last...
No, it had nude people.
Oh.
So inappropriate content.
Or appropriate for some people.
Oh, appropriate for some people.
What is art?
Absolutely. Yes.
But you know, yes, you could have a repository. The downside of that, if it's always open, people will perhaps forget about it, or you end up with the same four or five people always submitting all their tracks and other people not doing. So I think
I can see merit in that as well. I mean, having a thing that, you know, when I do my software updates, I get a new piece of music every month or something, yeah, just delivered, you know, based on a package that I subscribed to that was, you know, classical or rock or, you know, metal or whatever, and I get a new track each month from this free software showcase. And definitely a good idea. I like that as well.
It's a whole different project for that, isn't it?
It could change your login noise every month.
That would be
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, have a 5 minute. You know, symphony.
Five minute
symphony instead of the special drums from Pete Savage.
Ubuntu Conga, wasn't it?
The Mozilla team have released Ubiquiti, which is nothing to do with the Ubuntu installer of the same name. It's actually some kind of funky command line and toys for the browser. What is all that about?
It looks like they're trying to put more content more easily into email and the browser.
What, like embed stuff? Like,
yeah.
So maps and
other kind of... Yeah, maps and other content, reviews and things like that. There's a fairly good video explaining it on the website.
Dell are now shipping new mini PCs with Ubuntu or Windows in the USA, with the UK to follow shortly. At £269, they're 9-inch display laptops, and they're competing directly with the likes of the Asus or Acer or MSI for the sub-notebook market.
Yet more little PCs to play with.
Hopefully they'll start driving the price down soon.
They are down.
And, well, and also, you know, it's a big manufacturer. It's not like, you know, MSI, who nobody had heard of before the MSI win.
And they've actually got a proper Linux distribution on.
Yeah, yeah, proper Linux, not Xandros that the Acer comes with, Mickey Mouse girly mode. It's proper Ubuntu.
The Debian project is now offering a new beta live version based on Lenny, which is the current version in testing. According to the news, the images are available for CD, DVD, USB sticks, tarballs, and PXE netboot and SquashFS image.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, welcome to 2005.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it's 2008, and we haven't even got USB versions of Ubuntu yet. And I mean, you can force a CD onto it, but... That's pretty good, I think.
But a live CD, woo.
Who says we never give anything back to Debian?
And MyTac and Commodore are also offering new ultra-mobile PCs.
You've got to do... If you get a Commodore, you've just got to put a Commodore emulator on there, haven't you?
Has it got the badge on and everything? With the
yeah,
logo?
It's got the... Well, I mean, obviously, Commodore don't exist anymore. It's only the name. It's the name only. But it is the original logo. And they are quite sweet looking. They're white.
Does it come with a floppy disk drive?
Not a 5 1/4 inch floppy disk drive, no.
It's no good then, it's not a Commodore.
I had a look at the MyTac today, and they're actually shipping what looks like an SD GPS with it, which is...
Oh yes, it's a little, isn't it a little pop-out GPS thing?
Something like that.
Yeah, that's really cool. As if you didn't know already, Google's released a new web browser called Chrome, and it's based on open source technology, including WebKit. The browser promises to be faster, more secure, and easier to use than existing technology. And after getting some criticism for a somewhat dodgy end-user license agreement, Google's relented, and it's now looking more acceptable.
Has anybody tried it yet?
Yep. In a VM under XP, because the Linux version isn't out yet.
Any good?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's all right. It's a browser. You know, what's it going to do? Make my coffee?
Is it fast?
Yeah, even in a VM under Windows, it's still pretty quick.
Cool.
And I quite like the home thing that's got... I think they ripped that from Opera, but it's got thumbnails of the websites you visit most often. That's quite nice.
Will the Linux version be out in time for IBEX?
No.
Launchpad now has mapping built in, so users can pinpoint their rough location on a Google map. And if they're in a team, then the team map shows their location along with everyone else in that team.
Yeah, it's good if you're a team spread all over the world. You can see where geographically your people are. So if you're scheduling meetings and stuff, that's quite handy.
Okay, I was going to say it sounds pointless, but I'll give you that one.
So, yeah, quite a lot of people did ask, what is the point in having this? And that's the only reason anyone gave.
And why are they using Google Maps?
Because the answer that came on the launchpad mailing list was because for the guy who wrote it, there was no mapping in his area for OpenStreetMap.
Get himself a GPS and sort it out.
Yeah, absolutely. We can put him through to some people who can help him with that.
Yeah.
In the last episode, we opened our competition for a Bitfolk VPS. I think it was £200 of credit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, because we released the actual episode quite late... We've decided to extend the competition somewhat.
So people have better chance, because some people just don't listen to their podcast. We know they don't listen to them the day it comes out. And it's a little bit unfair if you listen to it, you know, a couple of days after the competition closes and then you want to enter.
Yeah. Basically, we're slackers and we didn't get the episode out quick enough.
Yeah.
So how long are we going to extend it by?
We're going to keep it open till Wednesday the 17th of September. So essentially that's another fortnight on the original date.
Remind us what the competition question was.
The competition question was, which Ubuntu releases do Bitfolk support as standard?
And how can you find that information out?
Well, we should leave that to the listener, really, to go to bitfolk.com.
Oops.
Oh, what a giveaway.
Once you've found the answer, you email it to competition@ubuntu-uk.org, not podcast@ubuntu-uk.org, and we'll draw the winner in the next episode.
Guys, it's almost party time. 30th of October, new releases out.
Yay.
Intrepid Ibex. I've not made one of the release parties yet. It's in my diary. I'm going to be there.
I think we should have it in the same place as we had the Hardy one, actually.
Yeah, I've heard it's really good.
Yeah.
Cool. But
that's a plan.
That's a plan.
That's
to see
the
that.
Important bit of it out the way.
So have any of you actually downloaded it and installed it and see what it's like?
Yes.
No, not yet.
You haven't?
I have, yes.
Excellent.
Why is that?
To test it and to make sure stuff works and file bugs if it doesn't.
Okay.
I bought a new hard drive for my laptop, and because I was running out of space, and I thought now would be a good time to partition it up so that I've got my normal partition that I use for everyday stuff, and then I added an extra 10 gig partition, and that's where I installed the next release of Ubuntu that's not out yet.
And how does that work for you?
Well, I dual boot, and what I tend to do actually is I not use it too much, because I've got obviously all my data on, you know, my partition that I use all the time. But I reboot into the other one and try the Ibex and try and use it as much as I possibly can, and you know, file the odd bug here and there.
So do you use it for sort of day-to-day stuff, surfing the web, IRC, email?
Yeah, what I would normally use with a PC. I mean, there's some stuff that I don't do on it that, you know, I haven't migrated across to it yet, which I could do. Like, you know, some of the more hardcore stuff like audio editing and video encoding and stuff like that, which I haven't started doing yet. But yeah, more day-to-day stuff. I mean, it's only got to the point now for me where it's working fully and I can, you know, use it. If the system is broken to the point where I can't even boot the thing, then there's no way I can do day-to-day testing and video editing and stuff like that. So, you know, it has to get beyond the point of being, you know, bootable and running and not crashing and that kind of stuff, which it is now.
I've only ever run alphas as live CDs in the past. If you install one on your system, what happens when the full one comes out? Do you ever have problems with getting the very, very latest last minute things, or do you have to reinstall the entire thing?
No, I don't reinstall. What I tend to do is I'll install whatever the next release is, the development version they call it, and I'll install off of an alpha CD or a beta CD, and then I'll just keep doing updates. And okay. And those updates keep on coming and keep on coming. And in fact, the great thing is on the release day, you don't have to do anything because you've got the final release.
Have you not any issues with that?
How do you mean?
In that way of doing it, going from an alpha and just continually updating and updating and updating without doing a fresh install when it's finally released?
No? Because, arguably there may be some cruft kicking about, but it's pretty much the same thing. You end up with the same net result.
I've basically got two computers that I use. My laptop at home, which runs Hardy, and I've also got a spare system at work, which I use briefly throughout the day for work-related stuff. Now, that's the one I normally put an alpha on. I just haven't had the time yet, although I'm going to do it on Monday, because I'm working overnight. But currently, there's loads of stuff on it broken.
On what?
On it's Hardy, but it came from one of the first alphas, and I upgraded it through, as you just suggested. Mm-hmm. And there's loads of stuff broken on it, but my laptop works. So
what
I don't
kind
think
of stuff broken? Hardware problems or
mainly video and audio, actually. And I've not done anything about it because my laptop works. So the desktop should work, but it doesn't, and it's not that I can't be bothered, but I don't think there's anything actually wrong.
I'm sure there are situations where something could be kicking around from an old version, but you know, usually when you upgrade, you do a full upgrade from one release to another, it removes all the old stuff and replaces it with new stuff.
But does it do that when we go through the alpha process?
Yeah, it's exactly the same process.
Okay.
Going from one release to another, is not actually that different from going from today's updates to tomorrow's updates. There's not actually that much difference between the two.
There's just a lot more updates.
It's just a lot more packages. It's still just installing Debian packages. It's just lots more of them with lots more dependencies and a few removals and a bit of tidying up. But technically, it's exactly the same thing.
It sounds like it logically should work. It just sounds scary, like as if it didn't work.
Not do a fresh install sounds scary.
But yeah, just knowing computers.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. Why do I mean, I've heard this a lot, and I've seen people, oh, I always do a fresh install after a new release. I don't know where that mentality comes from. What's the rationale?
No, I don't know. I tend to do in-situ upgrades between major releases. But I suppose if I was running pre-release, then the dual boot thing seems to make sense, or running it from a live CD, because it is pre-release code. It's known to have bugs and it's known to be unstable. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be running that as my main desktop. So I suppose really I should be running dual boot or with an external hard drive or something.
What I should do is change my boot order on my machine so that it boots directly into the development version to try and force me to use it a bit more often, because at the moment it boots into Hardy and I end up just using it because I'm not remembering that there's actually a development version on here.
But why should we actually go through all the hassle of potentially broken software actually installing the alpha? Why not just wait until it gets released?
Well, you can. I mean, there's plenty of people out there who do that, and they're called users.
Sure.
Yeah, well, we're all users in a way, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. So that's exactly my point. You could do that. But one of the things we always try and impress on people is that this free software thing you can contribute to. And one of the great ways you can contribute is file bugs, comment on bugs, help fix bugs in the code before it becomes a release that end users are going to have, who aren't going to have quite as much experience to be able to diagnose a problem and file a bug.
And to be fair, the free software wouldn't happen if people didn't do that.
We would spiral downwards into disappear into nothing if nobody ever ran development versions of code.
I suppose it's a great way to ensure that your crucial application is working and supported properly in the next release. If there's something you really rely on, you can't bear to be without, test it in advance, make it a dual boot, then you can be sure that it will work when you do the upgrade.
Yeah, contact the vendor of, if it's a third-party product, contact the vendor of that third-party product and say, there's a new version of Ubuntu coming out, it's using this kernel or, this version of X or whatever it is that the dependency is, and say, can you make sure your stuff works with it?
But even an open-source app, a packaged application in the repositories, if you rely on it a lot, you want to find out how it'll change rather than just doing an upgrade and going, oh my goodness, this application is totally different now.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the problems we have to contend with. Every time there's a release, there's loads of reviews of that release, and often those reviews are by people who haven't contributed at all throughout the six-month cycle of that product. And so they come in at the point of being a user and argue that from a user's point of view, this stuff should work, and I shouldn't have to file bugs, and I shouldn't have to faff about with a command line, and I shouldn't have to edit text files. It all should work. But it won't work if you don't help for the 6 months before that comes out.
No, but these are review journalists and they shouldn't have to do the testing beforehand. I know what you're saying, I know what you mean, but they're perfectly right. They're just reviewing a piece of software.
They're reviewing a released version of the piece of software, yeah. But there's no reason to exclude them from being part of the development process. There's no get out of jail free card with free software that says I'm excluded from helping out for the 6 months before this product is released. Just because you're reviewing it, yeah, you're writing a review, but it doesn't exclude you.
No, it doesn't exclude them, but that's not why they're writing the review. They're writing the review to see what it's like when it's released so that people can use it.
Yeah, and there's nothing in free software that says you have to be involved in a community of a project to be able to use it. That would be non-free software.
I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying it helps if you are.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it does, but I'd rather everybody in the world used Ubuntu and only 1% of them contributed back than 1% of the world used Ubuntu.
It's a bit like everybody using free software or not at all.
I'm not convinced.
Well, the further that free software and Ubuntu gets distributed, proportionally, I think fewer people will contribute. Because there'll be people who get it on an ultra portable or something like that who will just use it, hopefully. And that's great. That's what we want people to do, is just be able to use free software. They're unlikely to sort of sit and create a launchpad ID and file a bug if they do find a bug, because they're probably just consumers
Yeah, that's kind of why I asked the question, actually, because maybe we focus on the wrong thing with alphas, being the sort of the champion of the users. Alphas is all about finding bugs. Well, actually, shouldn't alphas be about getting the latest possible releases and, you know, with the latest functionality and the shiniest software, and giving that to the users and saying, hey, you know, this is where we're going. Have a look at this. It'll be fine. If there is anything wrong, then sure, you can deal with it if you feel up to it. But at the moment, alphas seem to be about fixing bugs rather than getting the latest software.
Alpha generally means that there are a lot of bugs.
Yeah. Indeed, absolutely.
And that applies for the whole of the 6 months before it's, you know, it's okay. There's a part early on in the release cycle where Ubuntu is synchronized with Debian. So at that point, there's lots of new crack in the repository, and a lot of it is broken.
Yep.
And then you go through the alpha stage where people try stuff out, and it's still really badly broken, and it's not a good idea to run it as a standard desktop or laptop because, you know, chances are stuff will break and your desktop won't work and the graphic driver will fail and you'll be left with a command line, and that's not very nice for a user to experience. And then you go through the beta where probably find that, you know, it does kind of work and you're going to get less of those issues. And then, you know, finally towards the release, you can probably be quite confident that it's going to work. At what point should a user get involved? Early on, when it's going to break and they're going to get dumped at a command line, beta stage where it might work but there still might be a problem, or after it's released?
In terms of this upcoming release, when does the beta part start?
So the betas start at the beginning of October. So there's a month of betas before release at the end of October.
So this is really a really good time for people to get involved, download the alpha, and make sure that any bugs that they come across are filed.
And then chase them through the betas. Carry on through that process.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
They just file the bugs and then hope that after the release it's all fixed.
Yeah, you get the beta, you check that it has been fixed, and if it hasn't, you go, wait, still an issue in beta whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think we need to try and get people more involved early on in that process.
Sure. But I don't think you're going to do that by focusing on the negativity of being it broken and you're going to, you know, download this to file bugs.
Yeah, but you can't expect people to think that it's going to be the positive side, that, hey, this is great new crack, but actually, you know.
But it may not work on your system.
Yeah. But what do you say to people when they take it home and it doesn't work? And they're like, oh, that's rubbish. Throw it in the bin.
Well, I think it's just down to education.
Right.
To be honest.
Perspective.
Yeah.
So
yeah, sure.
glass half full. Indeed. This is really, really great free software. And if you get a command line, that's great too.
It is. And if you're, it is. We love the command line.
And if your kernel panics, that's just great. That's really fantastic software.
It panics really prettily.
It's really cute.
Yeah, it doesn't go blue or anything silly like that.
Panicky, woohoo, I'm a panic.
Is that how we do positiveness on this?
Yeah, that's right.
Excellent.
One thing, as more people take up Ubuntu, you'll get more big companies possibly getting involved at the alpha level and doing formal testing so that, okay, as you get more users, you get a smaller proportion of them actually being involved in the alphas and betas. On the other hand, as it gets more ubiquitous, we're going to get more big companies possibly doing that formal testing for them.
What, so IT departments and testing teams trying this stuff out?
No, like Dell, before they stick it on their
OEMs.
Laptops.
Oh, yeah. Right, OEMs, not necessarily users. Well, their users are, you know, users.
IT departments may do. If they're going to be supporting it, they might. It's possibly in their interest too. Especially if it's for a particular set of laptops or whatever.
So if you want to get hold of a copy of the beta version or when it comes out, or even the alpha versions now, you go to cdimages.ubuntu.com and you'll find the ISO images on cdimages.ubuntu.com.
I shall do that on Monday.
We've had some feedback. One quick update was from Silvio Sisto, who tells us that the support with the Best Buy CD we talked about in the last episode is actually from ValueSoft, not from Canonical directly. So you don't get to talk to Kurt.
Oh, you can't talk to Kurt von Schnitzel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I'm sure they have lovely people at ValueSoft.
I'm sure they do. Maybe we should talk to someone from ValueSoft about their support.
Okay, we'll try and get hold of somebody.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Alistair McKinley emailed in to say that he loved the fact that in the background of the Samba interview, we had Highland Cathedral playing, which I think is some bagpipe music or something like that.
For the Philistine non-Scots amongst us, yes.
Some haggish-related activity. We should say it wasn't planned, it was just going on in the main stage when we were recording it.
No, so we have orchestras in the background playing our theme tune.
Jeremy Allison does, we can't afford them.
Alfred Newtile says, thanks for the film podcast and keep up the good work.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. Ken Fallon's been listening since the first episode and enjoys it, but he's, in his email he said that Miss Marple called and she wants her podcast theme back.
Swine, Ken.
We love our music. We also had quite a lengthy discussion via IRC with some listeners about the language we use on the show and whether we should swear or not and the fact that we don't and whether it's a conscious effort. And I just wanted to see what you guys felt about that, because we've always said we wouldn't. And I just wondered if, you know, you guys agree with that and we're okay carrying on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it is a conscious effort. And I,
you have to try really hard.
I do sometimes swear in real life. I hate to sort of, you know, give away all of our secrets.
Yeah.
But we want people to be able to listen to the show in the car. Perhaps, you know, we've had people email in say, this is great because I can listen to the show when I'm driving my kids to school or going on holiday, whatever. Well, and this, I don't need to worry about effing and jeffing all over the place.
This is one of the points that I raised, was people want to be able to listen with their kids. And the comeback was, who listens to podcasts with their children? And, I, you know, I'm not saying let's all sit round the fire like in the 1930s and listen to the wireless. I'm not saying that's
it's
what about, I'm
it's
expecting.
About the music.
Yeah, well, yeah. You might be forgiven for thinking that's what we want you to do.
Yeah.
But, no, it's, you know, it's the fact that if it was on, you know, playing on your laptop and you're in the den and kids come in, there's no problem that you don't have to turn it down or turn it off because they're around. That's more why we do, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think we see ourselves as part of the Ubuntu community, and if people came across the podcast as a result of looking for Ubuntu stuff, we wouldn't want to be them to download a show full of swearing and think it somehow represented what Ubuntu was all about.
I could see the argument that swearing isn't really, you know, it happens in normal life, in normal discourse for a lot of people, so why should we not just, you know, talk like people normally do?
I guess it's because we're the Radio 4 of Ubuntu podcasts.
Yeah, who was it that said that? It was Zalior.
Yeah, it was.
Wasn't
yeah.
it? From Lug Radio.
Darren said, Rimron.
Yes, he said we are the Radio 4 equivalent of Lug Radio, which okay. I think is a compliment.
Other yeah. people have said that as well, and so, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think it's necessary.
Okay. I mean, one of the points that was put was it's a way of emphasising a point, you know, and I've tried to express, you know, I am in agreement with you. I think we should not swear on the show, and if a guest does or one of us accidentally does, then we bleep it.
I mean, I like to think I can express myself reasonably clearly without having to resort to swearing, and if I can't, and the only way I can make my point is to F and Jeff about it, then I probably need to reconsider what I'm saying.
I agree.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to get hold of us, you can email the show via podcast@ubuntu-uk.org, or you can leave 30 seconds of voicemail on 0845 508 1986.
You can follow us on Identica via identi.ca/UUPC, or via our Twitter feed, which is twitter.com/UUPC.
Alternatively, if you're into IRC, you can chat to us via the #Ubuntu-UK channel on the Freenode IRC network.
We welcome suggestions, material, tips, reviews, rants, and feedback, both positive and negative, so please do get in touch.
Thanks also to our network of mirrors who make it possible for us to bring the show to you. Showmedo.com, Bitfolk.com, and our other community mirrors hosted by Nefalo and James. That's all for this episode. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.